Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember, life is about the journey.
Welcome to another episode of the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is Jamie Gert, and I'm guest hosting again for Amber this week. And this week we have Rose. Rose is a midwife practicing out of North Carolina. Hey, Rose, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Rose Watson Orman. I'm a nurse midwife in North Carolina. I'm excited to be with y'all today.
Oh my goodness. Okay, everything starts with what called you to midwifery? So was it something that you saw as a kid? Were you a mama that had her own kids? What brought you to the profession of midwifery? And then where you are today?
Sure. I think that it sounds really trite to say calling by whom or what, I don't know, but that feels about right. When I was a kiddo, I was raised in a really religious, conservative environment. And every night I would pray for my parents, pregnant friends, and their babies. Like every night, I don't know, it just kind of was the thing that I did. So I think that was like the first, there were signs. And then I worked, you know, thought I was going to do public health. I was in a public health program, but right before I started that, my partner and I, we got the chance to do an internship in rural East Africa in Uganda, and I got to work with traditional birth attendants. And that was the first time I ever saw midwives being this like strong, matriarchal, you know, integral force in their community. And so that's when I started being like, oh, midwives are like a thing and they get to do this awesome work. But I think I had a lot of like internalized misogyny around like, you know, no one in my family had done healthcare. I, you know, science is hard. I'm probably not good at it. And then, so I did doula work because I was like, this is how I can be involved in birth work, but I don't have to go through, you know, the hard stuff of going through midwifery school. So I was a doula. I met a home birth midwife through that, who kind of took me under her wing and, you know, invited me to learn to assist her. So I was like, okay, oh, some clinical things, I maybe could do that. And then the first birth I attended with her, I got there first and I caught the baby, and all like I walked in and she was standing by the table and the head came out and I squatted down and that baby opened its eyes and looked at me and I put out my hands and I caught that baby. And I think all of the neurotransmitters and the hormones in my brain exploded in that moment. And I was like, oh, okay. Oh, I have to be a midwife now. So that led to like years of infatuation and trying to figure out what path I was going to go down. But I think that like, I just really like it. Like, I just really liked being at the veil and watching these people give birth really powerfully. Like my intro to birth was home birth. And that I just couldn't not be a part of it. So that's how it started. That was how it started. And then, that's the beginning.
That's amazing. I can see the stars aligning for you when you come in and you're like, oh, I'm the first one here. Oh, the baby's coming. The baby looked at you and was like, this is your calling, Rose.
Basically. Oh my gosh. That baby's name is Andrew. He's like, I don't know, 11 years old now. And I have a picture of me looking young and well-rested holding this baby. Little did I know what was before me.
Oh my gosh. But our journeys all start somewhere. Okay. So you had the stars align and Andrew was like, you have to go do this. So how did you start deciding what pathway you want to take? What schools did you consider? Why did you think some were the right path for you versus others? Mm-hmm. And then did you look at all the training pathways, right? You said we started in Africa, you saw like birth assistant and like birth work there, which is different from the United States, but then doula work and home birth kind of gears you into one aspect of midwifery. And sometimes that tells people, hey, maybe I want to go over here, but did I consider the other option? So walk us through that. Where did you start? How did you choose schools?
Sure. So I was in the middle of a public health, like my master's of public health at UNC Chapel Hill, and I really just wanted to quit and run away. And then I realized probably quitting one graduate degree to do something else wouldn't like look good on your application for places. But initially I thought that I was just going to apprentice because I really jived with this CNM and she was open to taking a student. And, you know, I was 25 and not thinking about legal ramifications because in North Carolina, CPMs and lay midwives are not just illegal like they are in some states, they're illegal. So you, depending on what's going on in the state, they can be hunted down and put in jail for practicing without a license. Of course, at 25, I was not thinking about all of that. I was like, I will do an apprenticeship model. This makes, you know, the sense in my life. I want to do homebirth. I want to be a traditional midwife. And then things kind of fell apart with that apprenticeship. And it just wasn't like transitioning from a birth assistant to an apprentice. It just didn't go well for us. So I was kind of, and then my other options were a bit limited. Then I was actually going to have to go to school. And I didn't have a background in nursing, but I also started to sink in the realities of living in North Carolina. And this was the community that I wanted to serve. So at that point I was like, okay, I'm going to be a CNM. I need to be a nurse midwife because they're the only ones who can legally practice. So I started looking at, you know, we have one midwifery school in North Carolina, which is amazing, ECU, but you have to be a nurse first. And that was, I was silly and felt old at 25. Now I'm like looking back at, that was not old. But I was trying to think, how can I be a midwife the fastest? I don't want to work as a nurse. I just want to be a midwife. So I looked at two programs. I looked at UPenn, University of Pennsylvania. In Philly, I had one of my midwife mentors went there and I really respected her. And so I started doing the prereqs for that. I started doing them while I was in public health school because you could take extra classes for free. I started taking classes at the community college. I had a baby in that time somewhere. And you know, I started looking at that. And then I also kind of on a whim applied to Yale because they didn't require any prereqs and they didn't require you to be a nurse. And they had a program that well, you do 1 year of nursing, you get your RN, and then you do 2 years of your specialty. And that's ultimately the route that I ended up going because I didn't love UPenn when I went for the interview and it was longer. It was like a 5 year type deal and it was more expensive, weirdly, than Yale. So, I just felt like it was the fastest way because I'm a sprinter. So I went there.
Sprinter.
Yeah.
That is a sprint to do a 1 year RN and then your 2 years for CNM. That is a sprint. You are a sprint.
With an 18-month-old. Yeah. I started when my son was 18 months and that year is just hell. It's called the Geppin year, which is an acronym for something. But I was able to do it because I had a supportive partner who he was working on his own graduate degree and kind of working coffee shop jobs. And so we put Levin in daycare, but you know, he became the primary parent at that point and he continues to be in that role. And then I had another baby in midwifery school, which is like a whole thing. So I eked it out. I did it. I procreated and graduated from midwifery school in 3 years.
Balancing all of the things.
Yeah.
Okay, so Yale, the RN program, I feel like those are pretty similar. If there's anything that stood out to you about their program, comment on that. But what did you like about the Yale program specifically? Anything with the classes, the professors, yeah, their clinical sites? What did you like? What could you have left if you want to comment on that too?
I would love to talk about that. I liked a lot of things. I mean, you don't get a BSN at Yale. You just get a certificate. There are people who come in with BSNs and just do the second 2 years, but most people go to this program because they don't have a background in nursing. And I didn't feel like that was a disadvantage for me because I knew I didn't want to work as a nurse. So that was great. It was very intense. You know, you start in August and you take the NCLEX in the following July. So it is very, and then you start your specialty in August. So that was great for people who have the resources to be able to do that intense lifestyle. Not everyone can do that. It was in person. All of it was in person. So we moved my family from North Carolina to New Haven for 3 years. I really did feel like I got an education that I probably couldn't have gotten elsewhere, especially in North Carolina, because I learned a lot about abortion. I learned how to provide abortions, and I learned how to counsel. I learned a lot about trans care. I learned a lot about trauma-informed care, which of course you can learn other places too. But I felt like because it was in the Northeast, I got to step outside of the South, the more conservative South, and experience new things. I thought my professors were great. So overall, it was a good experience. Yale is really white, though. It's a lot of people come there with really privileged backgrounds. It is really white. There were very few people of color in my class. And some of them, you know, there weren't always the resources for folks coming from like a diversity of backgrounds there. It really is set up for success for people from one particular background. And that was something that we encountered while we were there.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, great. And then tuition-wise, how much was your tuition? Did you take out loans? You said spouse was working in the coffee shop kind of job thing, but were you working as well? My guess is probably not, because we were
talking about sprinting. In the midst of my sprint, I could not do anything else. Any of my classmates did. They worked at Planned Parenthood. They worked at a birth center that was close by. I did not work, but I got a scholarship, the National Health Service Corps, and that paid for everything. That paid for all my tuition, all my fees, my health insurance, my books, and I got a stipend that paid for most of our rent. That was a game changer for me. I would still be buried in debt, because I think that if I hadn't gotten anything, it would have been well over $200,000. But we did take out loans because we had a kid and living expenses. So I left and then had another kid and had more like childcare expenses. So I think $82,000 was what I walked away with debt. There was one trip to Costa Rica. I regret nothing. And by the end of it, my spouse was working a full-time job that wasn't paying great. But he had graduated and was working like a salary job, which was helpful.
That's amazing. How did you find out about the scholarship? And then is it a true scholarship? They awarded and paid for everything, and then you did not owe them anything back?
Oh, no. I found out about the scholarship from a friend who just texted it to me. It was like, hey, have you thought about this? Because she was going to PA school and looking at it as well. And again, it was like one of those things. I applied on a whim and I was like, well, this will be the only thing I apply for. And I got it, which was amazing. What was the second part of that question?
Sometimes there's a payback. So you have area
for 3 years.
Stipulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So 3 years I worked on the Eastern Shore of Maryland at a small community hospital, a federally qualified health center. So that you owe as many years of your life as they pay for. And if you don't fulfill it, you have to pay it back like three times as much as they gave you plus interest within 6 months. So you can't get out of it realistically.
Yeah.
I tried. It didn't work. So, yeah.
So you tried, but would you change anything? If you could go back and say, you know, you get your award letter that you get the scholarship, would you have said, Rose, you should decline this, knowing what you know now? Or would you say, no, you know what? The training was worth it. They paid for it. We had some loans. Like I did the 3 years, but did it. I don't know. Tell me your thoughts.
Yeah. In the moment, well, because being a new midwife is just incredibly hard. And that job was incredibly hard in many ways. And so probably about by halfway through, I was like regretting everything. But then I started a mental psych med, and that helped a lot of things. And so then by the end of it, I was like, I regret nothing. This was a great decision. I'm so grateful for all of these experiences. I wanted to say the only thing about that scholarship, I regret nothing, is that it's hard as a midwife, because right now, it may have changed, but there's not a difference between primary care and like maternity care. And so if you're a midwife, it's really hard. If catching babies is important to you, it's hard to find a site that lets you do full scope. Most of those jobs are clinic only, which is fine if that's okay with you. But if catching babies is really important right out of school, then it's a difficult, that's a challenge with that program.
Yeah. Now, when you came out of Yale, and you were looking for a site, is that a site that is assigned to you through the scholarship program? Or do you get a say? Do you get to rack and stack some choices? How does that work?
it's just like applying for a normal job. Your choices are just a lot more limited. So there's like a website that you can put in your criteria and then they'll post if they have a job. I also just emailed my CV and cover letter to a lot of sites just in case they were thinking about having a job opening. So this job was closer to grandparents, like my parents and my husband's parents, and had other midwives there. So I knew I wouldn't be like, you know, the one lone midwife. And it was near the beach. Like there were things. So that's kind of what drew me to it.
And then were you practicing full scope at that hospital or clinic or a mix?
I did one 24-hour shift at the community hospital, and it was like a midwife and an OB. And then I did 3 8-day, 8-hour clinics. So it was like a 48-hour baseline schedule. I saw about, you know, 26 to 32 people in a day. And we did a great mix of gyne and prenatal care. So I got to do so many things.
And then about how many births did they do in a month or a year?
You know, I should know that. A lot. I would catch anywhere from like 1 to 6 babies in a shift. And that's kind of splitting it with the doc. Like we'd kind of look at the board and say, who are you going to take versus who's the doc going to take as the primary person? And then we'd help each other out as needed.
Okay. So that was 3 years. And you said you tried to get out of it, but you did your 3 years. Did you have a point where you thought, I know I want to go into home birth and I want to create that model? Basically, how did we get you from the beach to North Carolina? Although
sure,
you live by the beach in North Carolina. You might live on the beach in North Carolina too.
I don't. I live about 3 hours from the beach, 2 to 3 hours from the beach. So we do go there, but this is actually the furthest. Living in New Haven and then living on the Eastern Shore, it's the furthest I've lived from the beach in a while. And it's starting to feel a little sad now that I'm on call all the time. So I kind of always knew that I would be a home birth midwife eventually, right? In my mind, the things that were keeping me from becoming a home birth midwife was the accessibility piece, because it really felt like home birth was really only for those who, especially North Carolina, when, you know, insurance isn't covering it usually. It's really only for people who have some amount of resources and a certain demographic. And that just didn't sit with me. Like I was like, I became a midwife. One of the other reasons I became a CNM was to be able to take insurance and to provide midwifery care, really empowering midwifery care to everybody, right? Part of my job in Maryland was I did manage some like higher risk patients, and I loved it. Mm-hmm. So that kept me out of it. And the lifestyle, like I've watched midwives kind of run themselves in the ground and burn out. And then after coming from this job in Maryland, where the baseline was 48 hours a week, I mean, I worked, sometimes would work way more than that. I was burnt out because I was trying to provide really good care to everybody 30 times a day. I was really burnt out and wanting to do something really different. So I worked a second hospital job at UNC Chapel Hill with part of their midwifery division, which kind of dissolved and became a service, which is really different. Thinking that that would kind of, you know, be some sort of great middle ground where I could settle into for a few years until my kids were older. And then I got into that job and realized that I still was dreading going to work, that there were things about that job that were just really hard for me to swallow. And I wanted to be able to provide the kind of care that I felt like I needed to provide. And this job, even though it was a midwifery practice, still didn't let me do the things that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I missed my kids. And I hated leaving my house. And so I had some friends who were like, okay, you're setting up these false timelines for yourself. Like, get it together. Just like do the thing you want to do. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll do the thing that I wanted to do. I also had, so the person whose desk I'm sitting at is my business manager, Hannah Smith, who's she's a longtime friend. We met when we were new moms or pregnant. And she emailed me while I was in Maryland, was like, hey, if you ever want to start a home birth practice, I'm in. I will help you do the billing. I will help you do the business stuff. Like, I got you. And so I remember contacting her like 1 month into my job at UNC and being like, so are you serious? Like, still, you still want to do that? And she said, yeah. And then I had another, one of my best friends is my birth assistant and a doula and lives 5 minutes from me. And she was like, I'm into. And so the three of us started, we were in cahoots and we were like, all right, we're going to design a home birth practice that like meets everybody's needs, that meets our needs and our clients' needs. And it kind of just went from there.
Oh gosh. Okay. So give me a peek behind the scenes when you're sitting down and you're having those first business meetings. What were the things that you said, we absolutely have to do this? You wanted accessibility, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. And part of that is the pay model, right? Which you can go to your website. You have this beautiful layout of how you do your pay model. But what did you each come to the table saying, we need this to make our life sustainable, right? You want to see your kids more. You want to spend more time at home. Right. Like, where is the practice located? What were all those things that were brought up in those discussions?
Yeah, we did. I took this like how to start a home birth practice class, and they wanted you to do vision boards, which is like my worst nightmare is to do a vision board. But I did it. Like our first meeting, there were snacks, there was champagne, there was cardboard and magazines, and we did vision boards, which ended up being great. Like mine's on my wall in my bedroom. Like I love it. But yeah, we just kind of talked about how we wanted to be, we wanted to create community. We wanted to be a safe place for people. We wanted it to be a place where people could be heard, especially from like communities that typically are not heard from, or their voice is muted in obstetrics and in healthcare in general. So we kind of talked about our values, why are we doing this? And a lot of it had to do with, yeah, community, being inclusive, being empowering, trauma-informed care, and life-giving for us. So I think that, you know, we all kind of came to it with different needs. But for me, I want this, I mean, as a little 25-year-old who was trying to go to like literally every birth possible with no children, I never needed to sleep. I just like ran from birth to birth to birth, totally obsessed. Now I'm 36 and I'm so tired. I'm trying to do the least, and still take care of my family and still do this really fulfilling work. So yeah, it's very nebulous, but we kind of wanted to limit it to just 2 to 3 people a month. We wanted to do gyne care. For me, I wanted to do fertility care as well. That felt really important to me. And we wanted to do community groups. Heather and Hannah wanted to do classes. And, you know, so it just kind of like, what do we want to do? Well, like, here's a space, like, let's build a practice. And then because of insurance, like the access piece was really important. So I had been kind of playing around with this idea of a sliding scale, but was really terrified to do it at first because it relies on the average being, you know, kind of the market price. So around here, that's $6,000 to $7,000 for like global maternity fee. But then you have to charge the higher income folks more, which was like, ooh, like, will anyone actually hire me if they have to pay above market price for my services?
Right.
And so that was really scary, but it felt like a non-negotiable. Like I have to, I can't charge people making $30,000 a year or $7,000 for a home birth. Like I just can't do that. So we launched it and it's been great. So yeah, we go from $3,000 to $9,000 is kind of our schedule right now, which is a really big, you know, it's a big range. Mm-hmm. $7,000 is sort of where most people, it's like the $100,000 to $150,000, the household limit. That's what those folks pay. And then we go up and down from there. And it has worked out beautifully. Like I feel like the higher income people get it. They get the mission. They get that like we're trying to make home birth accessible. And they're in, no qualms. I mean, it's not like I haven't had people who've tried to talk me down, and that has, as a recovering people pleaser, been hard, but you know, we figured it out from there. And it just feels so cool to be able to be like, no, you don't have to pay, you can pay $3,000. And people are like, you know, it just feels really amazing to be able to do that and still know that I'm getting paid and my birth assistants are getting paid and I'm covering my costs and I'm not sinking myself into the ground. It really relies on community care, which is so beautiful. It's so beautiful to see us just be like a vessel for the community to care for each other. Yeah.
And to make you guys sustainable. I think that whether you're paying higher or lower on your pay scale, everybody is seeing the benefit for the community that you're living in. And hopefully they're all, and they're kind of like, yeah, team home birth. Like we're all here. This is part of a service in our community that we want to see for decades.
Yeah, I think that it's great. And then the other piece was, how can I not burn out? How can I not be like this sort of this generation of midwives who are now in their like 60s, just like being shadows of themselves, or knowing that like midwives burn out after 6 years, they leave, you know, patient or client care after about 6 years, and that I'm like not going through all of this stuff to only work for 6 years. Like, I love this too much. So I borrowed a couple different things from some midwives. One was from one of my midwife friends, Belinda, who has actually been on here before. She takes off two, this was new for her too. So we kind of, you know, she had done it 1 year before and it worked great. Take 2 months off of call a year. Can't just do one, because then you're, first you're going to have people who go late the month before and who labor at 37 weeks the month after. You get no break. So it has to be 2 months. During that time, I'm still doing gyn care. I'm still doing fertility care. I'm still doing prenatal care, but I'm able to schedule in vacations. I'm able to know that I'm not going to get called in the middle of the night, and I'm able to actually rest. So that was one that is a really crucial piece. And I'm still, and being willing also then to take other weeks off, like a beach week or some time off in February. We're planning a Hall River midwifery trip to Costa Rica next year. And yeah, it's going to be great. So excited. So being willing to pay a backup to cover clients during those times. And then the other piece I took from a midwife, Tanya Willis of Manhattan Birth in New York. And she has one of my dear friends birthed with her a few months ago. And she kind of had this like sustainability document that she sent out to all of her new clients that basically was like, we love this work, but midwifery is really effing hard. And we need your help in helping us be sustainable. And so really laying out when it's appropriate to call, when is it appropriate to text, and when is it appropriate to email, and really trying to stick with that. Because, you know, we're home with midwives. We're like always trying to text everybody, you know, and it's like people expect to text back within like a few minutes, or you know, they really want us to be right there with them all the time, where that's just, oh my gosh, not sustainable. So, and part of that other also document is just like asking for grace, being like some births we recover from really quickly. Some births take a long time and we need you to be flexible around that. And just being upfront, it's about integrity and communication and having people on board with you with this from the beginning rather than starting at like 28 weeks. So I have no text alerts on my phone. Like I will see text messages, but it's not ever interrupting me. There are no noise making. I just turned off email alerts like yesterday, which feels really powerful. And really trying to limit the time that I'm texting my email, checking my email. And then being really clear, like I do want people to call me when there's a reason to call me. And we kind of go through that in depth throughout care. And that, I think it's doing its work. Like it feels, there are times when it feels overwhelming, but I think that it's helping a lot with quality of life and being able to shut off and still be present with myself and my kids and my partner. So
that's amazing. I have not had text notifications or notifications for anything for years now, maybe 3 or 4 years. It's been a long time. I forget who told me to turn them off originally. Because I'm just one of those personalities. Well, I think lots of midwives are like, we cannot have stuff coming at us, right? Tiny meteor showers all the time.
Tiny like, meteor showers. Yes.
And you're like, oh wait, is this a big meteor or a little one? Right. Your yeast infection is still going to be there at 8 a.m., but you don't need to call me at 3 a.m. to talk about Monistat. I have not heard about a sustainability document like that in practice. I'm going to track her down and see if she'll share it, because I feel like that it's a very healthy boundary. And it's also just, it's just transparency at the heart of the work.
Transparency.
Like,
yes.
We are working so hard. We want to be there and give you everything that you need, but please be kind and, like you said, graceful and offering grace to how hard the work is.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, we're in a partnership with our clients. We're partnering. And I think that that's a really important part of it, is that we're respecting each other's boundaries. And that way we can have the most trusting, optimized relationship. And I can show up for you in the most full sense at your birth, you know, if I am not getting text messages in the middle of the night over yeast infections, right? You want me to be my most present self. And so we're all working together so that I can be the best midwife to each client that I have.
Yeah. That's so well said. Now, what about your kids and family? Do you have, we didn't talk about this. Do you have family that lives in your local community? Where are your extended family members? Or is it just you and your immediate family?
I have family 2 hours away in both East and West. And so, and just kidding. Sorry if my sister is listening to this. She does live like 40 minutes away from me. That is pretty close. And they've come, sorry, Anna. They've come in clutch for me so many times too. My husband also has a very low intensity job. He's still salaried with the same nonprofit that he was working for in Connecticut, but it's low intensity. So he is the primary parent still. It's such a blessing. I can call and be like, hey, I'm on my way to a birth. And he's like, oh, okay, cool. Like there's no he cooks, he cleans, he does like all of those things. I participate in stuff too, but there's not as much pressure. So I can really truly come home from a birth and crash, and all the kids will be taken care of. And I do ship my kids off like on the reg to their grandparents. Like that's great. They're awesome. They're just, a couple hours away.
That's amazing. Now, what do your kids say when you are running out the door to a birth? Are they like, bye mom, have a good birth?
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they're a little sad. But it's been their whole life, right? So I didn't come to midwifery after they were born. I came to midwifery before they were born. And so they're used to it. I think my 9-year-old was telling me the other day how much he loves my new job, like how much he loves having me around. And that felt really good, to hear him say that. The youngest, I think that once you are home more, when you leave, they're like, wait a minute, we're used to having you at home. So there was a little adjustment period when I started running out the door, but, they're not really interested. They're kind of grossed out by what I do, which as a midwife makes me feel a little sad, but, they're very supportive.
Yeah. Okay. Now tell us more. We kind of commented about your practice. I don't think we talked about the name of your practice. So name of your practice. And then what does a week look like? So how much clinic are you doing when you're doing your gyne or your fertility care? Mm-hmm. I think you said maybe 2 to 3 births a month. So how many clients are you taking? And then what's been the average number of births either month or year since the practice opened? And
yes,
are you hoping to keep those numbers and goals? Or are you trying to change something based on how the birth rate and the community? There's so many things that go into how you decide to change numbers, but tell us those things.
Yeah, sure. So our practice is called Hall River Midwifery, HAW, because we're right on the Hall River. So being like really land-based was important. I started out saying I wanted to do 2 to 3. It has really been more like 3 to 4, mostly 3 with a few like 4 around the months that I'm taking off just to kind of compensate for those numbers. I do clinic 2 days a week and it varies. Basically, like the first person scheduling in that week gets to pick the day, unless I have something going on. We do like, a support group and we have monthly skills drills. So there's some walkout times, but yeah, I do 2 days of clinic a week and it varies. This week I saw 4 people in clinic total, which is so small. It was great. It was beautiful. I loved it. No complaints. This next week coming up, I have, 8 people in 1 day. Most of them are hour long appointments. Either they're like new appointments or like postpartums. And then I think I have 5 or 6 the next day. So that's a pretty busy week, especially considering that I'm doing labs. I do labs at home at the practice. And my office is in my house. So we have this 1890s farmhouse that we're slowly renovating. And the first room we made look cute was my office. So I don't have to leave my house, which is also the dream because I do a lot of gardening and homesteading. So people come to me most of the time. They know my cats, they know my chickens. It's very cool. I like it. I do labs in-house, which takes up a lot of time processing, putting in those orders. It's not as simple as when you work in a hospital through Epic and you're just like, boop, 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 boop. It's a whole thing. I do like full scope gyne stuff. I do IUD insertions. I do endometrial biopsies. I do, and on top of all the routine screening stuff. When I do fertility care, I go to people's houses. Like if I'm doing an IUI, then I'm going to their house, but otherwise folks are coming to me. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what the volume looks like we're a new practice. Like, we opened our doors in October. We have only been doing birth since February. We are babies. So a lot of the stuff that I'm telling you, I'm like, this is what I hope works. Let's see how it works. Check back with me in a year to see if I'm still, you know, waving my flag of sustainability or not. I would like to add a part. What'd you say?
We'll bring you back on the podcast. And we can do, you know, 1 or 2 years later and all the lessons that you've learned and the new wisdom you have.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's been hard. You know, there's been so many learning curves. Again, like, without Heather and Hannah, I don't know how home birth midwives do it all by themselves. Like, I don't sign breast pump prescriptions. I don't send over ultrasound referrals. Hannah does all of that. You know, we're doing a big, like, just big queer family planning event coming up next week that we're going to be at. I haven't had to do anything for that. Heather has taken care of all of that. I just show up and smile and answer questions. You know, like, I don't know how people do it without really good partners. So part of me taking, you know, more people is I also want to make sure my birth assistants are like getting, they're committed. We're committed to each other. I want to make sure that they are getting enough births to sustain their lives. So there's that. I think I would like to add a partner eventually. If I can find someone that like that we jive really well and practice similarly and have similar goals, mostly so I can truly just have a week off where I'm not going to get any calls and I can like have a hot minute. So yeah, there's that. There's okay, that for
you're
sure.
You're in North Carolina and you're interested in becoming a partner. Maybe they can send you a message.
Please. Please
help. Okay. So, to go back. So one other question that I had that we skipped over was when you were coming out of the hospital and you guys were team, we are going to start a home birth practice. Did anybody walk alongside you? Did any of the local midwives or some of the CPMs or the CNMs, I'm not sure who's in the state or the community, and basically help you learn how to put your labs in? Or was that some of the team members that you were, it's right. Experience is so valuable. And if you've had that experience, but if you don't, you have to learn it. So how did you guys learn what you didn't know?
I took that class, which was helpful in some ways. And then my friend Belinda, who had started a home birth practice like a year or two before me and had learned a lot of hard lessons, was like, you know, I was like, okay, how do I do this? Like, she was like, okay, you have to like, you know, go through the state for this and the Board of Nursing and the Chamber of Commerce. And so figuring all of that stuff out. Labs was kind of trial and error, honestly, but we figured it out. The folks at LabCorp have talked to me so much, but they're nice.
Rose is calling again.
Yeah, it's too. Rose, my like representative Emily, like, what's up? We email every week. You know, so yeah, a lot of help. And I feel so needy so many times. I'm so grateful to the people who have like taken my calls and helped me out. And it's also weird, you know, being not in a hospital system and not having access to a lot of the resources, like up to date, it's like my lifeline for looking at clinical practice guidelines and evidence for different things and dosages for medications. So I finally bit the bullet and like bought my own subscription, which was like $800 or $900 a year, which I think it's totally worth it. Yeah. And and I still have like an OB from Maryland that I called just the other day to like run a plan by her to make sure I wasn't doing anything too rogue. Lots of good support from folks.
Yeah. Okay. And then what was the name of your course you took? Because sometimes people like to know.
Oh, I know. It's Empowering Midwifery Education, I think is the name of the company. And they have you know, billing a billing class for midwives. And
I've seen a couple out there, but if you liked the one you took, they can definitely.
Yeah, it was a fine overview because it's not just about home birth. I say home birth, but it's really about starting a midwifery practice. And a lot of it is geared towards birth center stuff, which was not, you know, applicable to me. My overhead is so much lower than what birth centers face. But it definitely gave me like a good jumping off ground.
Yeah, it does. Okay. Now in school for Yale particularly, do you feel like they helped you at all with any courses on how to start a business and how to be either a birth center or home birth? I know some programs put that into their curriculum and some do not. So what did they do?
No, they did not. And in fact, at Yale, you can't be precepted in home birth. Like, you can't go and do that. But many of the, like, I assisted a CNM in school and I was mentored by a CPM while I was in school. So I sought out those opportunities for myself. But what I do think that Yale does is it it's either selection bias or something about their program, but midwives, a lot of home birth midwives come out of Yale. And I think because they instill such a sense of autonomy in who a midwife is and how they practice, right? Because no one is coming, being indoctrinated in the nursing practice of being like overly deferent towards physicians or other providers. You really come in being like, I am a specialty in and of myself. I am not an OB light. I am a midwife. And yes, we like learn the importance of collaboration and referrals. But I do think that that set me up really well to be like, I can be a home birth midwife and be autonomous in this, which is also why it was really hard to come back to North Carolina, because the laws here are very different than what they were in both Connecticut and Maryland, where I had my first licenses.
Tell us more about North Carolina. What's the current environment like? What are the issues the state has practice-wise? I think CPMs are still illegal, right?
Yep.
I don't think that's changed. Okay. Nope. And CNMs,
no, we're trying.
CNMs have full independent practice?
Ish. Not really. So we used to be one of the states that has, you needed a doctor to sign your license to practice, which is just infuriating and so insulting. But I, you know, so many great midwives have been fighting the fight, and I feel a little guilty that I've come in just as things have changed a bit. But unfortunately, North Carolina had an abortion ban that went into place last year. And with that, for some reason, foolish practice for midwives got stuck onto that bill. ACNM had nothing to do with it, but it got kind of passed under the radar. So that means that I got my autonomy at the expense of everybody else's, and it's tenuous. If that law gets overturned, then I lose my autonomy to practice, because all the other advanced practice providers, PAs, NPs, still have to have that supervising physician. Mm-hmm. So yes, I have full practice. There are, you know, I can't, there are certain things I can and cannot do. Like, I can't do VBACs at home. I can't do multiples at home. I can't do planned breaches at home. And you know, there's like a 42 week, you know, there's things,
right,
restrictive things about the practice. But you know, it's better than it was. Like, I don't have to pay. There was definitely a lot of extortion going on with midwives have to pay OBs several hundred dollars a month for them to not do anything. I, in the months leading up to that, I was helping out a nurse midwife around here with like mostly assisting her, but also kind of backing her up. And I paid an OB out of state to be on my, to be on my license, just to keep me clear of any legal trouble. Mm-hmm. But then once that law passed, I was saving several hundred dollars a month.
Yeah. Oh, I understand that. Yeah. That is it's a sticky legal situation, right?
And a lot of places. Yes, only time. And a lot of, you know, in North Carolina, hospital-based midwives, there are some that like, they're saying, oh, you can't, we want to actually let you switch over and become autonomous, because you have to apply for a new license. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pushback from hospital systems. And even if you have autonomy, you can't admit under your own name, you have to admit under a physician. A lot mm-hmm. of just like, you know,
yeah, just, yeah, they're small barriers, but because there are so many of them, it slows down the ability for us to give care.
It mm-hmm. really does. And 50 out of the 100 counties in North Carolina don't have any maternal health care providers. And so it's a turf battle, but it's like actually hurting birthing people in North Carolina.
Yeah. Okay. You spoke a little bit about collaborative practice with your provider in Maryland. Do you have somebody locally that you collaborate with? You obviously have plans for transfer, but you have a good mm-hmm. working relationship with the local hospitals there. Speak a little bit about that.
There's an OB nearby who sees my clients for ultrasounds. I've not met him, but he's been very supportive of home birth. And so I do send people to him for prostate testing and the anatomy scan. And I send people to the local hospitals, but no, like the environment around home birth is not particularly friendly, which is, I think that I thought of when I was running into this like postpartum complication the other day that I wanted some like advice on. I thought of one OB at UNC that maybe I could have called, but I had to go back to Maryland because, you know, for people that I knew would respect me and, you know, I trusted their advice. So it's kind of a bummer.
Okay, what would you give advice-wise for a midwife that is getting ready to graduate school, thinking home birth is for them? What would be your top tips of advice or wisdom?
Oh man, I think that there, you know, this is probably controversial. I think there is something to be said with like getting some good numbers, getting some like managing emergencies under your belt and practicing in a hospital. I don't think you have to, but I think that there is definitely some like, you know, going straight into home birth. There's also, unless you have a really good mentor, it's just really hard. Your first year of practice, I mean, I cried every day. And I'm crying a lot now too, you know, just like the newness of it. I can't imagine doing both at the same time. And so I think there is something to be said with having like really good mentorship, getting some good numbers under your belt so that you know that you can manage a postpartum hemorrhage, you can manage a shoulder dystocia, without any assistance, you know. So I think there's that. But then I think the other trick, if you know that you want to do home birth, or really just for any midwife in general, is that like, when we work in a hospital, we can stop believing in the mat in physiologic birth. And we start to maybe start thinking that all birth needs a little bit of help, or that it's really easy to go in that direction. So doing something that reminds you that you believe that birth is normal. For me in school, that was assisting a CPM and assisting a CNM. In Maryland, I didn't have time for a lot of things, but it was making sure I had a good relationship with the local home birth midwives and being, you know, hearing them and making sure I could take care of their transfers and, you know, listening to podcasts where I'd hear birth stories where I could just be like, okay, birth is normal. And so I can let birth unfold even in a hospital in the way that it needs to. And yeah, start connecting with your local home birth midwife. I couldn't have done it without Belinda. I couldn't have done it without Nancy, without these people who believed in me and were there to answer my questions that were incredibly mundane, but essential.
So, oh my God. Amazing. Now, do you take students or apprentices?
We haven't yet, but like, we can take from, like nurse midwifery schools and also CPMs. Definitely, students feel really important to me. I guess the other thing I'd say about advice for aspiring midwives is coming out of the gate with boundaries. I think that that's the other thing. I kind of dealt with it when I was younger and infatuated, but not everyone, you know, sometimes it really is in midwifery school where you catch that birth bug and you'll run yourself into the ground if you don't come out and think about why you're actually doing what you're doing and how you're going to be set yourself up in doing this for the long run. Because we do, the stats are real. We burn out. And you can't think that you're different, that you're special, that you're somehow just not going to burn out. So going ahead and planning for that now feels really, really, really important.
Yeah. Like vacations to Costa Rica.
You got to have them on the books. Oh my gosh. I'm going to do so many things when I'm off call in September and October. We're going to like, my husband and I are going to Mexico. We're going to go to a Ren fair. We're going to like going camping.
Yeah.
We're going to live it up. So I can be grounded the other months of the year.
Right, sure. Right. I think sometimes we're so hesitant to take vacations, but it makes us a better midwife.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Trips, vacations, all of the things. So.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay. Last bits here. What do you recommend as resources to your patients? So books you like to recommend, podcasts, apps. There are so many resources out there. And then what do you like to recommend for resources for midwives? So, right, two categories there. What are you recommending to your patients constantly? What are you recommending to fellow midwives?
What I'm recommending to my patients and clients, my favorite book these days is called Feed the Baby by Victoria Ficelli, who's an IBCLC, and she just published this book. And I am so sad that I didn't have it when I was a parent, new parent. It's super inclusive for all feeding methods and super inclusive for queer folks, and folks with disabilities. It's just like, and it's not too much information. You just can like look up something and there are QR codes with videos. It's like revolutionized how I provide lactation care for folks. So, that is probably, if I had to pick one resource, and honestly, I would probably do that for both. I feel like nurse midwives, we don't get enough lactation and infant feeding. Like this, the only things that I know about that are my years of being a birth assistant and apprenticing and feeding my own babies. I felt like, you know, even in school, it was like so little feeding stuff. But yeah, I'm pretty bad at reference, you know, resources for midwives. I'm really enjoying, I'm doing some continuing ed classes through Midwife CE mm-hmm. that I'm really loving. I'm doing her integrative gynecology course right now. And I did her advanced suturing class. I think it's just called suturing class now, when I was a baby midwife, and that helped so much. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Those are two things that you hit on. We definitely need more lactation education, but really just hands-on, right? Where you understand what lactation is, but you need the hands-on experience, right? Mm-hmm. How do you fix these things? How do you see mm-hmm. if it's a good latch, bad latch? I have not heard of that book.
Oh, it's so good. And guidelines have changed. You know, we used to throw antibiotics at everybody for, like, you know, you could maybe do 24 hours of ibuprofen for mastitis, but then we were definitely giving everybody digoxicillin. And the recommendations have changed so much. And around yeast and these things that we see in clinic all the time, the guidelines are shifting so much. And we're not always getting that as midwives, you know, new info, the new guidelines passed down to us in the same way we are around, like, GBS or treatment for gonorrhea, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. The new mastitis guidelines came out. I think they came out in fall of 22, and I was reading them and I was like, finally, thank goodness.
Oh, I was like, my mind was blown. I was like, wait, what? So
yeah. And I reference those. I send them to patients all the time too. Any last thoughts or wisdom to the students that are out there or to the midwives that are out there, whatever is kind of on your heart? I feel like you spoke so much all throughout this about, you've got to set boundaries. You've really got to be setting up something that makes you sustainable. Vision boards. I just love that you did a vision board and that you still
vomit
have it
everywhere. But it was so good, but I hated it. Just a couple things. I mean, I feel like we talked a little bit about So we talked a little bit about, like, why I came to midwifery, right? Like, just like this sort of trite calling, not trite, but calling. And then as I am a grown-ass midwife now, and, you know, practiced in hospitals and caught lots of babies, the reasons why I do it are so different now, which, you know, probably I should have said earlier, not as, like, my last ditch, like, final farewell. But I think that the reason why many of us do it is that we are in a healthcare system that is constantly trying to strip birthing people of their power, right? We're constantly trying to undermine our, like, beliefs in ourselves, and, like, it sets us up for failure for years down the road. And part of that is that we're traumatizing people. So much of what I do now is to, like, not to give people power, because they already have it, but to remind them of the power that they already have, and to really see that many people are coming to my practice, whether it was in the hospital or now, traumatized, and providing that really powerful trauma-informed care, which goes beyond asking permission to do a cervical exam and goes into giving them options and choices and not just telling people what to do. And that is what's fulfilling for me now, is to see people. Like, before I was like, oh, I want to see a baby come out of a vagina, and it's great and we love it. And it is really, really, really magical to every time to see that. But now it's like, when I see someone step into their full power, whether that means a baby fell out of their vagina or not, it's just like, oh, this is why I'm continuing to do what I do. So I don't know, that, like, the trauma-informed care aspect is, like, actually one of the main reasons why I left the hospital and came mm-hmm. to home birth, because I felt like I could provide it a lot better in my home, in my office, and in other people's homes than I could in a hospital setting. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that is, like, and then the last thing is that I think I mentioned it before. I think it's easy for us. I mentioned that I was really suffering and really trying to get out of my scholarship in my first job until I got my mental health under control. And I think that that's not something we talk enough about as midwives, is that we act like we should just be able to raw dog life, and we should just be able to just suck it up and do it. And boundaries is a way to do that. And there's also, you know, all the other resources. Like, I'm in therapy, and I I've just restarted a psych med because I love my life and I am going to do what it takes to make sure that I'm mentally well to be able to care for myself and my community. And so I think that that's also like, not everyone needs to be on a psych med. Probably everyone should be in therapy though. That's true. But I do think that like, those are the things that as midwives, we have to be doing in order to keep doing this work for years and years to come.
Yeah, those are beautiful, beautiful comments. I think we see, I always think of the spectrum. Sometimes we see so much joy, but we see so much heartache too. And those are heavy, heavy things. And we carry them around forever. We don't ever go to a birth and then just forget that that birth didn't happen in our lives. And, and you have to be able to manage it. And sometimes your mental health is the thing where you're like, I have my kids, I have my family, I have my house, I have my chickens. Like I need something to help bolster my daily life.
Yeah. I need something that's going to keep me grounded. And that can be a number of things. Like I do herbs and I do like all, you know, I'm a whole person. And yeah, I think that it's also, this is a high stakes job, right? Mm-hmm. It's great, but it's high stakes. And I think that, and being a home birth midwife, there's so little we can control about our lives. Like there, we can control a lot of things, but I can't control what I'm going to get called to at birth. I can't control so many things, which is just really hard. It's something that, you know, people going into this work need to go into with eyes wide open. It's really important.
Yeah, that's a perfect place to end. Eyes wide open. That's what we all need.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eyes wide open with boundaries.
Caveat. We need the caveat too. Yeah. How can we find you? Are you on Instagram? Are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
You have a beautiful website, which we'll link to in the show notes if anybody is looking for either care in North Carolina, but also you said you take students and maybe a partner sometime soon in the future. Yeah.
Yes. Let me know. Yes. We're on Instagram, Hall River Midwifery. And then we have our website. So.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Well, Rose, thank you so much. This was a pleasure.
Thank you, Jamie. It was great talking with you. I've loved listening to your podcast, so it's really fun to get to blab at you for an hour.
Oh, we enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. Okay, bye now.
All right, bye.
Thanks again, Jamie, for hosting another great interview on the Journey to Midwifery podcast. If you don't know Jamie, she's the blog owner of A Midwife Nation. She can be found at amidwifenation.com and on Facebook and Instagram at A Midwife Nation. If you go to Jamie's website and blog, you will find tons of articles and a list of seriously endless amounts of resources for providers, midwives, and any expecting families. I cannot recommend her website enough. My favorite part is some handouts she has, free ones including a safe over-the-counter list of medication to take during pregnancy. But my favorite resources are her prenatal and postpartum guides. If you go on to amidwifenation.com, you can get the first prenatal visit guide for free. A summary of what each guide is, a guideline of what to expect at each visit, and anticipatory guidance of what to expect at next visits, and a QR code with live links relevant to each stage of pregnancy and postpartum. I really cannot recommend these enough. These are a must-have for all providers, midwives, and expecting families. If you decide to purchase the guides, you can use the code JOURNEY, JOURNEY, for a discount at checkout. Thanks again, Jamie, for hosting. I really enjoy it, and I can't wait to hear you again on the next episode.